Welcome back to another amazing episode of Politateen, where high schoolers Varun Katathala and Damian Galvin engage in perspective-filled conversations on America's most pressing issues. Visit www.politateen.com for more content. Happy listening, guys.
We're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politateen. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Katathala. I'm the co-host of the Politateen podcast. As you all know by now, it's episode number 61 of the podcast today. A couple of quick housekeeping things and just announcements we have to make. For me and Damian, it's been quite a couple of weeks. We've been kind of discovering ourselves and learning new things as a podcast, bringing you guys the best content that we can deliver. And so it's going to be a rough couple of weeks ahead, but amazing content to be coming out. We've been kind of radio silent for the past 2 weeks just because we've been planning content and getting episodes out to you guys recorded. And so it should be fun leading up to the inauguration day, which is in, I think, Damien, it's 18 days now, if I'm not mistaken, January 2nd. So we're filming this January 2nd. It should be coming out tonight, actually, at midnight, because we've been slacking this week, as I was saying before, and I feel bad about it. But I'm going to kind of go into a quick conversation about, you know, not only the inauguration, but just, you know, the past couple of weeks in terms of, Christmas and New Year's Day. How are your holidays, both of them?
They were extremely uneventful and everything that I could have expected out of a 2020 set of holidays. It felt like the fitting way to have a holiday season in 2020. Christmas just felt like another day of just being home and you open gifts, and New Year's kind of felt the same. You just dinner was a little bit fancier. What about you? How did it go?
So it was, I flew up to Chicago because I have my mom and my stepfamily living there. And so we had a big, you know, not a big, but a family Christmas, which, you know, my, my aunt and uncle and who live, you know, practically next door. So that's our only form of, you know, connection in Chicago because we're trying to be, you know, Chicago is a lot more packed up than Atlanta just because they have more regulations, a Democratic state. Illinois is a whole Democratic state. And so the city itself, the city of Aurora, which we live in right now, is very packed up. The fun thing about, before I go into Christmas, the fun thing about, you know, me being there was the fact that I saw so much more compassion. And in terms of just going to a gym, I saw every single person wearing a mask. Every single person in my hindsight was wearing a mask. When I went to a basketball court, which is the first time I've gone to an indoor basketball court in, I'm not going to count the months because I am, it's very late. It's 11 o'clock. But,
it's since, good. A couple March. Months.
Yeah. It's been since March. So a long, long time since quarantine happened. And so the reason why I went is just to see how people were handling the situation, if they're wearing masks or not. And believe it or not, every single person in the gym was wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. And well, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I don't know if you saw, because we're like, you know, we're talking about Chicago and just easing into the conversation here. The homicide rate in Chicago went up, you know, despite all the quarantine mandates and everything.
I did not see that. And, and the problem is that I live in a suburb.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about like Chicago. Yeah. I'm talking about,
I got you. You're talking about Kanye West Chicago.
Yeah, I'm
from Chicago.
I call it Chicago to look buff, but no, that's not the point. I live in a suburb. And so in terms of like, you know, I want to talk about that definitely, but in terms of my Christmas, I'm going to make it super quick.
It
wasn't too eventful, but I had some good family time with my family up there. I came down for New Year's Day. Had a great time here too. And so it is going to be a bunch of, you know, packing down for the podcast in the next couple of weeks, but it was a good break from everything going on. Hope you guys had a break from us. You know, we're hearing our voices every single Monday and Friday over the past couple of months now. And this was our first week-long hiatus, I believe, since Thanksgiving break, which we saw the podcast, you know, one day on. But it was fun, you know, to just take that little break. But in terms of homicide rates, that's very interesting because, you know, it's if you've been to Chicago before, you'll know that there's a bunch of alleyways with shady stuff going on, and it's not stuff you want to be venturing into. But seeing that homicide rates are going up, I just don't know. I think that it, you know, I live in a very high class area, in a wealthy area called Aurora, kind of coming Georgia where we live in right now, a retirement place where people just go to have fun and retire. But you know, it's a very wealthy place, and so there I feel like they had more adherency to the overall guidelines. But the problem is that if you go to Cumming, Georgia, which granted, it's very affluent, as we both know, I went to a golf course, a couple of golf courses actually, and one of them didn't have any masks on, anybody with masks on in the golf shop, the pro shop. And it's the contrast between places that are both pretty wealthy, but different geographic areas, different governance, and different people making them up. And so it's just, that was my contrast to be made. But I would love to talk about the homicide rates, actually.
Yeah, so it was like it was a 55% jump in homicide rates since 2019. And experts are attributing it to the protests, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was not necessarily the protests, but more so civil unrest. So that I think that includes the protests, but also includes counter protests and just everything going on within respect to racial tensions and also like the whole lockdowns and stuff and how Republicans were showing up to Capitol buildings with their AR-15s. And whatnot. I think that all of that attributed to the homicide rate going up.
Yeah, I mean, civil unrest has its consequences. You know, we talk a lot about how it does help to build a pressure upon our congressmen and women to make the right policy decisions, but it does have a consequence. And in places like Chicago, it's very exacerbated. You see, I think 769 deaths is what I'm looking up right now, leading up to the new year in the city of Chicago. And so it's not unexpected, but with the whole situation going on, I would expect people to be inside and be packed down. But knowing that it's Chicago, a place of gang violence, a bunch of gangs in the area, you know, it's they do not necessarily follow COVID guidelines, and that may have been a part of it. I mean, you don't expect again to be following COVID guidelines when enough people. But it's also, like you said, civil unrest and protests, and we've seen a lot of that in Georgia. Not as much as Chicago, obviously, but we've seen a lot of that in our state and capital. It's about just doing it right. And there's two ways to do it. We talk about it a lot. The way is not, you know, burning down buildings. The way is not killing people. The way is not destroying monuments. I mean, not monuments. I mean, like CNN Center and places like that. The way is not either of those things. The way is getting together. And like we did in Cumming, Georgia, I believe, we stood together in front of the courthouse. I wasn't there because I was in Chicago, predictably and ironically. They stood in front of the courthouse and protested with arms locked together for justice. And it wasn't any violence. Yes, there was people, counter-protesters, saying bad things as we, you know, Damian and I advocated against the fact that a high school student said the N-word continuous times in front of that gathering, but that didn't deter them. That didn't make them go out and you know, commit act of violence against that person. And so it's about keeping your calm, keeping your cool, because if you get out of line, it makes you just as bad as the other side. And that's the exact, you know, the number one profound thing to remember when you're, you know, dealing with protesters and counter-protesters.
Yeah. And I think that more so, like a big problem with it, and the reason that the homicide rates went up is obviously these people already have a lack of respect for authority, like the gang members and stuff. And I think that we can get into, you know, why gang violence happens and whatnot, but that's not necessarily in this conversation. Yeah. What's necessary to recognize is the fact that there's been a lack of trust in the government's role in society. And I don't know if it necessarily just comes from the racial tensions too. I think that people are upset with the system, and I think that we saw that play out on November. When was the election actually finally declared? It was like November 7th, 8th?
It was 7th or 9th.
Okay. Yeah, it was around there. It was around there. Yeah. We saw that it during the election, that people are upset with the system and they want to see a change of it. And something that made that extremely apparent was the events that transcended a couple days ago. I think it was even yesterday, where Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi homes were both vandalized. I think Mitch McConnell's home, and you know, it's not funny, but like it's surprising, and it's pretty crazy and somewhat ironic for Mitch McConnell's home to be vandalized, because he's such like an avid supporter, and so is, I think, every patriot, but especially, you know, Republicans are such avid supporters of free speech and freedom of expression. But they graffitied "Where's my money" on his door, and they also left a pig's head. Did you see the tweet? I don't remember who tweeted it, but it was "Mitch better have my money," and it killed me. I was like laughing for like 5 minutes straight. But they left a pig's head, and the police refused to comment on whether it is like a real pig's head or a fake pig head. But the shocking part to this is that Nancy Pelosi's was her house was simultaneously vandalized, almost like if these obviously Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell live on two completely opposite sides of the country, but it's almost like these events were coordinated.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi's was just horrifying. You saw like a pig in front of her house with I don't know if it's fake blood, probably fake blood. They're not going to bring real blood. I don't know. They must be bold if they were going to do something like that. But I think that, Mitch McConnell, the guy spelled where's wrong. I mean, it was.
Yeah, he used the wrong. I think he used the wrong. He said words, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Where's my money?
R-E-S. Where's my money? Where's my money? I can imagine a guy or girl.
That's a blatant attribution to we can attribute that to our failing education system as well that Mitch McConnell has refused to respond to.
Yes, let's make education better. Make education great again, please. We need it.
great in general.
Make education great. Absolutely. Yeah. We need that, and I think that Cardenas, I believe, is our nominated Secretary of Education under Biden, and I hope that he does a lot for that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think that we just have to mention the fact that McConnell and Pelosi have become very polarizing figures on both sides. Pelosi being the unifier, actually, for Democrats, and McConnell being the divider for Republicans. They both try to do the same exact thing, right? You see Pelosi trying to unify Democrats under a common flag of getting Democrats elected progressive or moderate, and Mitch McConnell trying to unify the Republican Party under the flag of democracy, which is, McConnell has been an avid supporter of President Trump, but this round ago, he has congratulated Joe Biden for winning the election.
As he should.
Continuously said, as he should, as every American congressman and woman should, and senator should.
Yeah, we can talk
about
that.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
we're thinking the same thing, but we'll talk about that later. The point that I'm trying to make is that he has divided because his party can't accept the election results. Mm-hmm. You saw him coming out and talking about how the suit that's going to be unveiled on January 6th and the one that was unveiled a couple of days ago against Vice President Mike Pence, they're both, shams. Right. There's no way it's going to help the party. And the fact of the matter is that it's hard being in that position because you're, kind of faced with a dangerous predicament. Right. If the suits go through or if they get pushed out in court, you might find a Republican minority becoming the Trumpist party. And I think it's a pretty avid possibility, a sect of the Republican Party becoming a Trumpian party and the other part of the party staying the exact same. And that would, number one, it would reduce their numbers and it would completely dissolve any sort of dominance they would have in the next couple of years or decades. And so I think he's trying to avoid that because he sees the fact that there's a dividing, part of the Republican Party who will not stand up to President Trump. And I think Mitch McConnell mentioned it a couple of, maybe hours, maybe days, just as they were unveiling January 6th suit. I'm going to find his quote, but he said, "Has ambition so eclipsed principle? Has ambition so eclipsed principle?" And I think that Mitch McConnell is trying to put principle back to the forefront, and he's getting his home vandalized for that. And obviously the reason for his home being vandalized wasn't the election. It was a $2,000 stimulus bill that he thwarted. He didn't allow to be voted on in the Senate. And so, it just shows the fact that he's trying to unify the party under the fact that they are conservatives. And conservatives would not appreciate a $2,000 stimulus. Their economic policy does not allow them to. But under the flag that Trump has been putting out, they're forced to or lose their jobs. And so he's trying to unify them under the flag that we are conservatives, we're not Trumpians, and let's stick back to our roots because in 20 days, 18 now, this guy's going to be out of office. And what are we going to do with our party? What is the road forward? And he's trying to define that road. And for that, my friend, he is getting, I don't know what to say, but he's getting very, very, very big flack.
I think you ready for me to get like extremely pissed off with the conversation that we're about to have? I gotta warn
please,
you.
Please.
This is blatant fascism. It is absolutely disgusting, and I'm gonna talk about an individual that has especially bothered me to every bone in my body, like shakes with anger when I just see the progression of Ted Cruz. It pisses me off so much. He's such a bootlicker and apple polisher. It's absolutely disgusting. And it's gotten to a point where it's not even like remotely funny. This is such a blatant disregard for democracy and the democratic process that we have held truly and that the Republican Party claims loyalty to. They claim that they lay that their foundation is on originality, right? Obviously, there's no there can be no an originalist with respect to the Constitution, but the Republican Party attempts to be that,
right?
And when you're going to talk about being an originalist, standing up for what the Constitution means, what the founding fathers want, what the founding fathers put in place was a system, an electoral system, which is extremely outdated, that the Republican Party has advocated for, that Mitch McConnell said, we got to kill that baby before it, what was the quote? We got to kill that baby before it even gets in the cradle, or we got to kill that baby in the cradle, right? Referring to us changing our system of electoral process. And the reason for that, the reason that they wanted to kill that baby, even though they're anti-abortion, right, is because they know that the Electoral College favors them. And even then, they lost. And they lost and they refuse to be adults. It's not about being a man. It's not about being a woman. It's about being an adult. It doesn't have anything to do with being an American or being Russian or being a communist, socialist. You're not being an adult, and what you're being is fascist. You believe that you're entitled to that seat. You believe that you're entitled to the Oval Office, like a little kid being entitled to a lollipop on a sunny day. It's absolutely ridiculous. And honestly, it's gotten to a point where if it does not stop and people continue to support this, I don't know what the future of the democracy looks like. And I think that that's why you're going to see a turnout, a voter turnout, January 5th. And if it doesn't happen, I'm going to be extremely disappointed. But it's gotten to a point where it's not a system of politics, and it's not a system of games. And the Republican Party has always found loopholes, despite being the ones, whether it's in taxes or as we're seeing in the electoral system. It's not about games anymore or political strategy, because obviously the Republican Party has always abused political strategy. And it's one criticism that I have of the Democratic Party. The Republican Party doesn't know how to lose, and they'll pull every single flag. They did it with the nomination of Garner in 2016, and they reversed their roles in 2020 when we didn't want Amy Coney Barrett into the someone who just, first of all, as I've done more research on, is extremely unqualified to be in her position, and I'm happy that she's taking the takes that she has taken, but she does not deserve to be there. But no, the Republican Party has abused every single system that they put in place. Stare Decisis has been overruled an extraneous amount of times, and right now what we're seeing is so disgusting. And it goes to the ads here in Georgia, which we can talk about, which again are pissing me off. It goes to the fact that 12 senators, including Ted Cruz, in a sense,
he led it. Yeah, he led the effort.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It doesn't surprise me.
You're gonna hate him more for it.
Yeah. No. You know what? I don't think that I can give this man any more hate. He's a coward. I hated and I despised Bill Barr for the letter that he left. And you know, I'm trying not to use the term that we're all thinking of just being a blatant kiss ass. But both of them, both Bill Barr and Ted Cruz, are such. I don't understand how you can advocate for a nuclear family and go home and be a proud father.
I mean, I heard that and I'm still soaking it in, because it just captures what I've been thinking for the past couple of weeks and months and maybe years. Because one of the biggest things we have to understand is that in 2016, when Ted Cruz won Iowa over President Trump, now President Trump, soon to be gone, President Trump. Trump said that Iowa wasn't won by Cruz fairly. He said that he rigged the election. And so it worked against Ted Cruz, right? A lot of Republicans back then believed, not in the numbers that we're seeing now, but that a lot of people believe that Ted Cruz won the election in Iowa unfairly. And so for Ted Cruz to be using the same logic to give Trump the election that Trump tried to use to deny Ted Cruz the election in Iowa is just it doesn't add up, right? It's more than not adding up. It seems like it's reversing your stance on an issue that causes personal pain or personal suffering. It could have caused that for you. And so it just shows like just how heartless and how mindless in a sense that these people are. Ted Cruz is one person I will not support, will not ever support. And it's a guy that, you know, flip-flops continuously when he sees his constituents and electorate going one way in the RNC for Trump. He never endorsed President Trump during the RNC back in 2016. That's the Ted Cruz that I remember 4 years ago. The guy that stood on his feet, and as much as I did hate him, I respected him for standing up for himself and his dad, who Trump continuously said was I don't know, a JFK killer?
Yeah, he killed JFK. Imagine that, man. And you know what? Yeah. And I despise Mitch McConnell with every bone in my body, but at least I respect him.
Because, I don't know if I go as far as
respect him. No. I respect him because I think that we can all acknowledge that at least his stance has always been the same BS. Like, at least he's just a true Republican. Like, you know, at least he has a foundation. At least he has dignity.
About that one. I mean, Mitch McConnell has been completely committed to thwarting every single Democratic effort since Obama took office.
Yeah, but that's what Republicans do. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. at least he has stuck to his guns. And well, it doesn't Democrat. Constantly change yeah. ammunition. You know what I'm saying? And now they're so fine. Like, imagine crying and whining about Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. And now you're literally trying to overturn a democratic process. Like, what are we supposed to do to them? Right? And I would agree with Donald Trump's take. That is, you know, get that SOB off the field. Tell him you're fired. That's what we need to do to all of these guys.
Yeah. What's interesting is that, you know, you talk about how, what should we do to them? And the fact of the matter is that, you know, four of the senators who were behind Ted Cruz's petition of the election on January 6th to be unveiled are senators who are going to be actually inaugurated or put into office tomorrow, Sunday, January 3rd, upon the same election that Joe Biden won and that they're now contesting. And so these people are basically contesting the very election that put them into office so that they could contest the election, which is hard for me to say, and I'm going to name blast them. It is Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming, Roger Marshall of Kansas, Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, and Tommy Tuberville of Alabama. And they apparently don't believe in the fact that they were nominated fairly and put into office fairly. And it's the only explanation for this. And I feel bad for these people. I mean, they're thwarting their own power. I don't understand what's going on. But the fact of the matter is that 12 of the Republican senators led by Ted Cruz are contesting the election now, which is going to have no effect because for the election to actually, for states' electoral votes to be invalidated, both houses and chambers have to vote with a simple majority. And the Senate is Republican controlled. I believe it is. Is it not? Let me think.
Wait, what are you talking about? Sorry.
The Senate is Republican controlled and the House is democratically controlled.
Yes, it is.
Because I'm confused myself because of the new election.
Yes.
But that's what's happening. And so you're not going to get both chambers voting down the election. In fact, you're going to probably get, and 99.99% of the time, you'll get both chambers voting for the election's validity, unless Republicans turn out in great hordes to support President Trump. And it's just weird because, you know, you talk about how they don't believe in democracy and they don't believe in the principles that bind us together as a nation. But really, some of them are actually just following through on what their constituents are saying. And that's for re-election purposes. But it's the fact that many of these people's constituents do not believe in the validity of the election. And they're telling these senators and representatives to go out and actively contest the election. And now it's a choice between them winning the next election cycle and them preserving democracy and them preserving their own seats and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it seems like a short-term gain. It seems like a long-term loss for democracy if they do succeed, which they won't. Let's not talk about that too much and give it too much validity. But the point here that I'm trying to make is that it is hypocrisy every single step of the way, led by people who have been hypocrites every single step of the past 40 years. and led by a party who has been a hypocrite of itself for the past 4 decades.
And you know, I'm very, and you know, I've been having some very hot takes here on the podcast, and I'm eventually going to be banned on Twitch, or I'm going to be banned or canceled by conservatives very soon. But I'm very happy that I'm saying this in a hypothetical manner, in a video game, if you will. But there is a party that supports capital punishment in this hypothetical country called Murica in this video game that I'm talking about.
Okay.
And they are also extremely, extremely, or claim to be at the very least, very patriotic and very originalist. And they have a document that actually lays out the foundation for their government, believe it or not, Varun. And within this document, it outlines something very, very, very important. And that is this term, treason. As a matter of fact, in this document, it is outlined that those who commit such treason, right, an act of disowning their allegiance to the United States, conforming to enemies' bargains, or to give aid to those who want to overthrow the United States government. As a matter of fact, let me just define treason. The crime of betraying one's country, especially by attempting to kill the sovereign or overthrow the government. Maybe by like not counting the electoral process that just happened. But the United States, the Murica Constitution, thankfully outlines that these individuals, perhaps maybe 12 of them, could be subject to be prosecuted under treason. And such, they might just suffer under the capital punishment that they so strongly advocate for and that they so strongly and happily use to kill African-American men in the federal prison system.
Yeah, and that is Murica for you. That is Murica. And, you know, I think that it's important to also explain just why me and Damien, and I think that I agree with you on this point, think of what Republicans are doing today as treason. And it's not because we don't agree with the fact that all elections should be validated, and we don't agree with the fact that we should all, you know of 100% of that the 100% of the votes are counted accurately. But it's the fact that, you know, we saw so many audits, so many hand counts, and so many contests of the election in the past couple of weeks and months, and not a single one has produced significant results for President Trump. And it's not just about, you know, reaffirming democracy, as Ted Cruz and these 12 Republican senators are saying, reaffirming our belief in the democracy, which Democrats want to undermine. Because the point is that you're mentioning the same point the Republicans have been using for the past couple of months. The point that Democrats are undermining the election and they should be hung for treason. That's what Republicans are saying. And so the reason why their point is wrong and why, you know, I think that we're completely right is because they have continuously tried to. William P. Barr, the former Attorney General of the United States, is Trump supporter, a guy who, we're not going to say it, but he how do I mention this in the most non...
What are we talking about?
We're talking about how Barr sucked up
yeah,
President Trump.
He's a bootlicker,
Trump.
William Bootlicker
he's
Barr.
He's a bootlicker. So even William Bootlicker Barr, he got fired. He resigned, but he got fired for saying that, you know, Trump, there was no viable claims of election fraud that could have overturned the election and Joe Biden's victory. There was no viable claims. Even our attorney general, who's a staunch Trump bootlicker, said that. And so when you have every single person of authority in the consensus that, you know, there was no widespread voter fraud, there's no reason for you to be contesting the election unless you want to spur hatred and spur doubt in the democratic processes and undermine our next president and our ability to function as a nation, which, in my opinion, is treason. And so when you explain it like that, I think that both sides will understand it, because we do have some Republican viewers. We have Republican listeners. We have Republican guests. We've had one on last week. We have one on. We're going to have one on next Monday. We've had Republican correspondents. And I think that a lot of them will agree. And Tina Barton, especially our guest for next week, does agree that the election was not rigged. And there's enough evidence for both sides and enough evidence by and far that the election was conducted fairly. And we should follow the facts and not chase, you know, just numbers and hordes of people believing in a conspiracy theory that has not been substantiated. You talk about how this is, in my opinion, as absurd as QAnon to an extent, because there's no backing behind it. And there's hordes of people following it for no reason. You talk about how Republican senators, the 12 ones who have filed who are going to file a petition on January 6th, backed by the president and the vice president now, Vice President Pence, who got sued last week. We're going to talk about that later for the same measure. They're all saying that the only reason why they're filing this petition about the election results is because there's hordes of their constituents who believe in it. A blind belief does not constitute facts, right? Facts have to be substantiated by actual numbers, actual ballots, actual evidence. And nobody's presented evidence. Me and Damien are both law students. Damien and I have both been in the mock trial pathway, the trial pathway, the legislative pathway for a long time now. And the one thing that we understand that has been instilled in us in our education system, in our school, our affluent area, is that there is nothing that replaces the facts. And for anybody across America who's listening right now, I would like to reiterate, nothing eclipses the facts. And just one simple thing that is a fact in America, democracy is what we believe in. I will never, you know, stop believing in democracy. And I will never stop believing that we all believe in democracy and that democracy binds us together. And so until the day that an effort like this undermines democracy, I won't believe it. And I think that to end my little tangent here, I think that the only thing holding us together right now is our laws, is our democracy. And if we didn't have the laws and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that we do, this effort may have proved successful. But a couple of days from now, I'm going to be sitting here. A couple of weeks from now, I'll be sitting here with Damien and just talking about how Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated president of the United States later today. And until that day, I will leave you with this.
Yeah. And I want to, obviously, I've made a very strong switch in political identity, if you will. I think that the right would be very happy with me calling it political identity in the past couple of weeks. And if, for those that wonder, I've explained it a couple times, but for those that wonder what propelled me to swing so far, I mean, hell, I'm past Varun now.
You're well past me.
Yeah, I'm well past Varun and progressive takes. And I think that I was resisting the switch towards being progressive for a very long time. But one thing that the catalyst, if you will, was this undermining our democracy. As what Kelly Loeffler would call me, what, radical socialist?
Radical liberal.
Radical liberal socialist Damien Galvin. You know, as I would be insulted here for being a socialist, even though I'm we can, you know, speak about terminology and whatnot another day, but regardless of what you want to label me as, one thing that I am and proud to be is American. And one thing that I can understand, and I think that that anyone can understand, is that socialism can survive in a democracy, whatever you want to say about it. Socialism is an economic oftentimes more strongly an economic policy, more so than like being a parliamentary. They're different. Like a parliamentary democracy and a monarch and a dictatorship. A lot of people say that, you know, think that socialism and dictatorship, like they go hand in hand, which is not the case. And one thing that has really, really, really rubbed me the wrong way was the fact that people who agree with my takes that we shouldn't have individuals in the United States of America, the richest country in the world, not able to stay with their babies at home, their newborn children, that I am considered un-American. What bothers me, and this is by the right, what bothers me is that I am considered a radical socialist for advocating the fact that we have 1.2 million empty homes here in the United States, but we still have 600,000, and this was last year, the numbers are probably completely switched now, but 600,000 homeless people, and saying that we shouldn't have children here in the United States dying from hunger, and that we shouldn't have cancer patients dying because they can't afford the average cost of cancer treatment here in the United States, which is $400,000. In the richest country in the world. I am called a traitor. I'm called a socialist. Hell, people think that I should be tried for treason for even thinking that some of these ideas are okay. But what is really, really disgusting and something that I have never, ever, ever advocated for is overriding the Constitution of the United States and the processes in which we have operated as a nation. I only am able to think the things that I do with regard to socialist policies because of the fact that we live in such an amazing country in that respect. I have my criticisms of it, but as Baldwin says, it's because I love this country so much that I do have these criticisms of it. And I have been perpetrated so far to the left because regardless of what Republicans might say of us, we're the ones that are trying to stand here and advocate for the integrity of our democracy. But with that being said, and after my socialist tangent, I think that the most fitting way to end a tangent about socialism is with an ad break.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, did you set up that the dogs line? I think you set up a perfect segue for me. Ads here in Georgia. Reverend Warnock, I don't know if you've seen his beagle that he's been using in his ads. Let me try to find the name here of his beagle. I was actually reading very interesting article here. May have his pet. I was literally just reading an article about this beforehand because I was getting very, very, very aggravated. But regardless, Reverend Warnock's beagle has played a very strong role in his campaign ads. And, you know, obviously there's been a humorous manner or a humorous manner of using the dog, obviously, when he was talking about about Kelly Loeffler's takes are a load of or you'll get a load of what Kelly Loeffler's takes are. Yeah. And then he throws, you know, his dog poop away in the trash can. Very humorous, very clever. But they also play a deeper role. And this is something very interesting. And I want to talk about Kelly Loeffler's ads and the blatant racism and how that is being perpetrated in her ads. First, I want to talk about how Raphael Warnock is countering that. And all his ads have been very interesting in the sense that they have just been meant to counter Kelly Loeffler's ads. And I think, and I've talked about this over and over and over again, the right's ads are just feeding the left's ads. They're just giving them ammunition because right now, the one thing that is pushing and pushing and pushing, and the reason that Joe Biden won and why it was so important was because people were angry with the system. And when you see ads that are racist and ads that make you angry coming from the right, and then you see Reverend Warnock talking about, you know, how he's walking his dog, it's a very stark contrast, and they're very purposeful, and it looks, you know, in boxing, I'm a boxer, Varun, you know that, I don't know if many listeners know that, but in boxing, a punch is strong. And the right's throwing punches. A jab, that can be the foundation for setting up an amazing fight. But all of these punches that you're throwing can end with one thing, a counterpunch. And every single time Loeffler and Perdue are throwing out, specifically Loeffler in this circumstance, are throwing out punches, Raphael Warnock might take the blow, but only to respond with a stronger counterpunch. And one of these, I didn't even mean to say, obviously, the right's going to eat this up, but obviously, you know, one of Loeffler's ads, disgusting ads, false ads, has been about domestic abuse. So probably talking about Warnock punching Loeffler wasn't maybe the best analogy there, but Warnock has been using, before I get into that, Warnock has been using his beagle, and the reason that he has done this is actually strategical. Most Americans and most white people associate African Americans and black people with owning pit bulls, Rottweilers, and bulldogs primarily. And they associate white people with owning golden retrievers, Dalmatians, and huskies. Obviously, pit bulls, Rottweilers, and bulldogs have the stigma of being aggressive dogs. And 45% of white Americans own a dog, while 20% of black Americans own a dog. And obviously white families, and this is a stereotype, absolutely 1,000%, love the pooch. They love their dogs. I love my dog, but I mean, they take them into a part of their family. Whereas I know that minorities are less quick to do so, I'd say. But Warnock has been putting in his white people dog, literally a quote, it's a white people dog, in his ads in order to seem less aggressive, in order to seem more passive. And a lot of people are saying that he might have his pooch to thank if he does win because of this very reason.
And I think that it a lot of good points made there. I'm going to kind of talk about the election going on right now from a very nonpartisan perspective. I'm just talking about the policies and the ways in which both candidates have gone about it. And I think that you're right. It's strategic on both sides. And I think that the main thing going on with Democrats right now is the fact that we have a solid majority in the House and the presidency. And now we have to secure that majority for the Senate. And I think that it's important that we consider the fact that Democrats, a lot of them are very happy, right? We're obviously, with Joe Biden being elected, happy but not satisfied. But many are happy and satisfied. And so I think that Democrats are playing to the happiness and the jovialness that many of, you know, their voters and constituents have been expressing over the past couple of weeks and months to gain votes. Whereas Republicans have been playing upon the fact that many of the Republican voters are mad, they're angry, and they're scared. And because of the fact that they're angry and scared, they're wanting to build that red wall up in the Senate once again to preserve the just the balance of power, which they believe is, some believe is very integral to the election. A lot of the time, one of the ads I saw, actually veering off on a tangent here, about kind of the goodness of what they've been doing in terms of ads, is one of the Loeffler ads I saw earlier, Loeffler or Purdue. It was a very good ad. And the reason why was because they stopped playing upon the scaredness of Republicans in terms of Democrats getting control of just socialist policies, I mean. And they played upon the fear of many Republicans that there would be no control, no balance of power in Washington. And so the ad was basically centered upon the fact that if Democrats get control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House, there would be no balance of power. Democrats would get to do whatever they wanted, and there would be no person to stop them and create that 50-50 compromise state in the election. And so it actually featured just Republican Joe Biden voters who came out and said, I'm voting for Kelly Loeffler and Purdue because I want to restore the balance and make sure there's a controlled state of compromise in the Capitol, in Washington. And so I think it's a very powerful ad. And I think that that's their next strategy going onwards. We have the election, obviously, in 3 days. The results are finalized. But I think it's an important strategy for them just because of the fact that their votes are coming from a place of scaredness and a place of fear. And Democrats are coming from a place of jovialness and looking for progressiveness almost. And so that's a good ad base for both of them. But in terms of, you know, what they're doing, I want to kind of give a quick shout out to one of our listeners as I make this comment, who mentioned to me to do more research upon this. I hadn't done too much research up until then, but it was the fact that, you know, Ossoff and Warnock engaged in some poggers activity during the campaign. And by poggers, I mean that Warnock was in a Twitch stream for the popular gaming platform or game Among Us with one of our previous guests on Politine, Daniel Blackman. So glad I can say that now, because we have so much community around us. But beyond that, there was a Poggers stream that he hosted on Twitch. I'll get to a point here, I promise. On Twitch that he posted, and also I've been posting ads on TikTok and platforms like that. And I think that one of the most important things to understand there is that Democrats and Republicans, we know this, and we've talked about it multiple times, Democrats are for moving forward and engaging in new ways to legislate and to do things. Republicans are for, you know, staying to the traditional norm. Not going to say being backwards, but in a sense, it is being backwards. And so it kind of it's reflected in what they're doing. Republicans are not really engaging in platforms beyond Twitter, Instagram, and now Parler with Loeffler and Purdue, to a sense. And so those are the three main platforms. And if you look at their pages, especially on Parler, Loeffler's only posting donation buttons and articles and about various topics, not the funny and jovial posts that Ossoff and Warnock are respectively posting. And so it just shows the contrast between both parties. I thought it was very interesting to kind of mention. But I think that it's going to be a tough election just because for Republicans, I would say. I think it's going to be a tough election for both parties. One, for Democrats, because Republicans have incumbents. They have Loeffler and Purdue, more so Purdue because he has more of an influence being a voted on incumbent. And whether Loeffler was a, you know, appointed incumbent in the spot of Johnny Isaacson. But the Republicans have a challenge because the fact of the matter is that progressives and moderates are aligning together, believe it or not, to elect John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. And I talk a lot about how Democratic Party, and we talked with Mr. Eric Schultz about this earlier. He'd hate it if I call him Mr. I'll just say Eric Schultz for now. But we talked to him about how the party has to be unified. Mm-hmm. And I think the party has unified. Because progressives like Ro Khanna, who's one of the most progressive people I know, an Indian American, for all of you who don't know, was talking about how, I think the chair of the Progressive Caucus in Congress was talking about how he supports progressives in Georgia because Georgia, you know, realistically, progressives can't win. Because if you think about it, Joe Biden won the election in places like Augusta and Savannah that Hillary had not won back in 2016 because people thought she was too progressive and they thought Joe Biden was a more moderate pick. And they were frustrated with Trump. And so people, Republicans especially, switched from being a Republican to being a Democrat. And I think Ro Khanna and other progressives understand that in Georgia, which is a slowly developing Democratic, a place where Democrats can win, you can't win with bringing on, you know, very, very averse policies to many Georgians. And so you have to kind of ease in that transition. And many of these people like Ro Khanna have been pumping money into Georgia, even though they're progressive, because they believe in 10 to 12 years, Georgia will be a progressive state. And that's their end vision. And so the difference I'm trying to mention here, it's very rambled.
No,
but the difference
good.
Is, thank you. I appreciate you reaffirming that.
Absolutely.
I was starting to think I was being too rambled. But the vision here, and this is my last point, I promise. The vision here is that Republicans in Georgia are not unified. You saw many borders, advertisements that have said, do not vote for Perdue and Loeffler because they haven't supported the president in recent times. You've seen the president himself come out and say the Georgia elections are rigged and they're not fair. Actually, very recently, a couple of days ago, he said the elections were not fair and should not be trusted in Georgia and that Kemp was a fool and things like that. And so when you see the president coming out, and even a month ago, he came out and campaigned for Loeffler and Perdue without really making a strong play for both of their seats, just talking about how he should have won the election and how Georgia was rigged. He's going to come out on Monday and I believe going to talk just about how his election was rigged and not reaffirm the faith in the Georgia electoral process. And so when you think about how divided the party is, I think the Democrats have a good chance of winning just because the party is absolutely unified to win. And you see that across the state. We're both Georgians. We sit in the front lines, and we have the unique opportunity to say stuff like this. And I do right now. The fact that I have seen countless, countless, countless more Black Ossoff and Warnock posters and billboards and advertisements and yard signs than Perdue and Loeffler. I've seen past 10 days, I've seen about five. Mm-hmm. And in terms of Blackman, Warnock, and Ossoff, hundreds.
Yeah, especially yard signs. Especially yard signs and bumper stickers, and even in this in what is a deeply conservative county, I think that it's switching progressively. But I think that the majority one thing that would be remiss if I did not mention was that the majority of the United States is switching towards progressive to radical socialism, as David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler would call it. But I think that we can't ignore that. That the majority of the youth wants free healthcare, wants legalized marijuana. Would support higher wages and would support maternity and hell, you know, might get canceled for this one, but paternity leave. Yes, I think that fathers should spend time with their children. But one thing that that is important for the Democratic Party to capitalize on, and as speaking of Ossoff on TikTok, I actually saw this comment on one of his TikToks, and he's doing a really good job, and his campaign, his media team is doing an exceptional job of marketing him to be everything that TikTok needs you to be. Obviously, I had my own little social experiment on TikTok, but you can tell that they do his makeup beforehand, try to make him look attractive, loosen up a couple buttons for my boy Ossoff. He follows, they do his hair, they make sure that he looks good, because TikTok does have a lot of simp culture. And the recognition of this by the Democratic Party is absolutely crucial. And when
Ossoff has some culture around him. I've seen
saying.
It's being in Georgia and being able to see teens and teens around Ossoff. A lot of my friends, you know, obviously lady friends, have been talking about how Ossoff is a very attractive guy. Just to say in the most blatant way, very attractive guy.
Yeah, I'm gonna get the Ossoff cut, dog. So that
and you had it until maybe you grew it out. I don't know.
But, it's growing.
Subculture is definitely there, and I think it's on all wavelengths. TikTok is utilizing it. It's word of mouth and beyond that. But just go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say the comment that I saw was it was like talking to Ossoff directly. It was like, tell those old Democrats to get on the new wave. And essentially, I can't remember it verbatim, but what he was saying was like, the Democrats need to stop being old and recognize that their base is on TikTok. And the problem with them is I make fun of a Republicans because they claim to be the silent majority when they are the as Hassan, well, I won't use Hassan's direct words, but they are the they can't be quiet minority in the United States of America. The problem with the Democratic Party has actually just been mobilizing their base.
Yeah.
Republican turnout is always just higher than Democratic turnout. And I think that if they can capitalize on this, I'm seeing like AOC simp culture on TikTok. Like, people think that AOC is extremely attractive, and like, you know, everyone's got their taste. And if the Democratic Party capitalizes on moving to these new media platforms quickly and getting a good base there before conservatives can, and conservatives will be slow to it because, first of all, no conservative. I mean, like, maybe like Turning Point USA. Is on TikTok, and most of Turning Point USA is probably not, but like some of those individuals might be on TikTok, but they just don't have a base there. The Democratic Party's problem is, can they activate that base on these social media platforms? But you know, on the same grounds of these advertisements, have you seen the obviously, I was talking about the domestic abuse claims that Loeffler has been perpetrating. Have you seen these ads?
I have not.
Okay.
Not necessarily. Go ahead.
So it's an ad that has body camera footage of Reverend Raphael Warnock's ex-wife saying that he's a really good actor and that he's lying. And the claim here was that Raphael Warnock ran over his wife's foot, correct? And so I was like, this seems very uncharacteristic of a reverend. And so I was like, let me just do a very simple thing. And this is something, listen, if the Republican Party just did this every time they heard something, there would be no Republicans. But there's this amazing thing on almost every single device. As a matter of fact, we probably all have one in our pocket right now that has Google on it. If you do a very simple Google search, literally every single article will give you the facts. And the facts are, believe it or not, Raphael Warnock called the police in this circumstance. And the reason that he called the police was because his then wife was telling him that he ran over her foot. And Warnock, this reminds me, this is something that I would definitely do. If someone was having these claims of me hitting them, I'd call the police and say, hey, I don't play around. Let's have... I don't want allegations. I don't want nothing. Let's solve this before it gets out of hand. So Warnock did just that. He called the police. The police showed up. His then wife was very reserved around the officers at first and actually refused to show the police officer her foot. When a medical examiner later showed up on the scene, he found absolutely no evidence. And think about this. I'm not talking about Reverend Warnock pushed her. I'm not talking about Reverend Warnock, you know, gave her too hard of a pat on the shoulder, which in most cases, even medical examiners would be like, I'm talking about our technology is extremely advanced in the United States. Medical examiners would even be able to find evidence of the last finger of the last hair that fell out of her head. But he found absolutely nothing, nada, no evidence that Reverend Warnock ran over her foot. So this ad is just blatantly false and racist. It's racist. She's playing on a stereotype, Varun. And I think that it would be ignorant to not recognize the fact that she knows what she's doing. She's scaring her base. Look at the scary black man that you guys might elect. Make sure that the scary domestic abuser black man does not get elected. That's what he's doing. Or that's what she's doing. And it's disgusting that this is the political strategy of Republicans. I think that that in an interview, Lindsey Graham said it best. What's his name? Trevor Noah asked Lindsey Graham, "Why do racists tend to view themselves or associate with the Republican Party? Is it because there's a foundation of racism in the Republican Party?" And Lindsey Graham goes, "Yeah, there is. And this is why. This is why. Because of these ads. And it's absolutely disgusting. And the second ad I'll talk about quickly hasn't really been perpetrated or hasn't really been put out there as much. But it says that he tried to shield to shield child molesters. The fact here is state troopers in Baltimore showed up to a camp that Reverend Warnock was preaching at. And they were trying to interview teenagers that were being accused of child molestation. And Warnock insisted, as he should, that those teenagers shall not and will not be interviewed. He got in the way of those police officers without legal counsel. Warnock did not let them be interviewed because the same thing that happened to the Central Park Five was more than likely going to happen to those kids. They were going to be, what's it called? I can't think of the word here, but they were going to be coerced into testifying against themselves. So he, as a true patriot, right, as someone that stands up for the Bill of Rights, not as a radical liberal socialist, as an American and as a strong male figure, a true father figure, which, you know, the Republican Party has stripped away from a lot of African American communities, decided that he was going to put his foot down at all costs. The prosecutor dropped all charges on Reverend Warnock and said that he was actually extremely helpful in the case.
And the police thanked him.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's hard because talking about domestic abuse, you know, you saw Asaf go out to a Patel Brothers, which is an Indian American grocery store in my area, about 10 minutes from where I live, in Suwanee, Georgia, and I've been there multiple times. Couldn't go there that morning because I wasn't aware of it. I would have gone, and I would have gone in a rush. But what he said there to a Fox News reporter was that, it's hard to talk about domestic abuse. Right. And this is my opinion. And he was talking about this earlier. It's hard to talk about domestic abuse when you talk about Kelly Loeffler and how she campaigned and took a photo with Chester Doles, who is a former Klansman who, mind you, beat a black man and was in prison for. And it is just, I talked about hypocrisy a lot. And I think that it's again, hypocrisy over and over and over again. Domestic abuse. Well, let's talk about the fact that you took a photo and campaigned with Chester Doles. Right. Yeah. And it's, you can go on for rounds and rounds and rounds.
You don't even have to go that far. Let's talk about the president who literally has legal, in a court of law, accusations of domestic abuse against his first wife.
33. And, you can talk about all you want, but it's the fact that, you know, I think it's empowering the fact that Loeffler's using that kind of messaging because it shows that it's last ditch. It's desperate. And I think that if she wasn't, confident, and she's not confident to win the election, she's going to be using last-ditch efforts, which is exactly what she's doing right now. And I think that, you know, you're talking about, you know, I was going to mention this before, you spoke about the whole incident with Loeffler and the advertisement, but the fact that, you know, AOC has been getting Sim4 on TikTok and Asaf is going to be, you know, been Sim4 on TikTok. I think I might, you know, label this podcast, name it, we might name it, just intelligence is attractive. And I think that, you know, many times people just undercut how attractive intelligence is at times. And I think that a lot of people are attracted to intelligent men and women. And that's a reason for why Asaf and AOC have been getting some attention. But I think that, you know, in terms of politically and not just, you know, in terms of making a joke, intelligence is attractive to voters. And seeing somebody who can back their claims up with evidence and with facts and with real-time statistics is attractive to many, many voters, especially those people who compelled and propelled Joe Biden to a victory. in places that were once Republican strongholds, like Cobb County, Fulton County, those people are educated. And those people value intelligence. And to them, intelligence is attractive. And so you just have to understand that a lot of people are not going to fall for shams. And the biggest sham right now is the election overturning bout that people like Ted Cruz and others are playing. And I think that as long as we have people who think intelligence is attractive, you will have a return to justice and the law. But I think that, you know, it goes to show a lot that we still hold some truths to be self-evident. And I hope that, you know, in my personal opinion, we got 2 days. It is now 12:13 a.m. for us recording the podcast on Sunday and January 3rd. I'm running straight from my MacBook. But I really do hope that in 2 days we elect Ossoff and Warnock to the Senate. And it's just because it's not because I don't want to see a balance power under Capitol Hill, under the dome, but it's because of the fact that the Republican Party has veered so far off of the tracks that they need a broad reawakening. And that reawakening is going to come from seeing Democrats win en masse. And so if you reaffirm the Republicans' view that they can win by lies and by perpetrating false accusations of election fraud, as Perdue and as Loeffler have in the state, and if you reaffirm that, you're going to see more Trumpians emerge. And so my main reason for wanting Ossoff and Warnock to win is simply because I do not want a Trumpian party to emerge. I want, and I hope, and you guys might hate me for saying that I do this, but I'm genuine in believing this. I want the Republican Party to return to what it was a couple of years ago, because back then it was sensible. And back then it was patriotic. And now I don't know what to make of it. And I think there's a lot of sensible Republicans out there still, but I think that those people have to shine. And the only way they will shine is if we reaffirm the fact that they will not win by coercing fear, by coercing bigotry, and by coercing and perpetrating lies.
Yeah. I think that to end the podcast here, a conversation that absolutely has to be had was how Republicans are being bitten in the ass by their takes. And I mentioned this a couple podcasts ago, and I know that you were displeased with me saying this, but my greatest fear with socialism is the fact that the proletariat will be armed, and ironically will be the Republican Party that will arm the proletariat. But my biggest fear is that we will have a revolution and not a peaceful transition to socialist policies. And what the Republican Party is doing right now is fascist and is extremely out of pocket, for lack of better terms. But we have to recognize that these statistics that we were talking about earlier in Chicago are evident of this possible and hopefully unlikely revolution that I was talking about. And we have to feed the American people what they want. And we have to start treating individuals with respect and not just seeing them as a capital means of production. I know that you sent me a newspaper clipping from Bernie Sanders, and I think that I agree wholeheartedly with a lot of this man with a lot of this man's takes. But to have the last little conversation here on the podcast, it is an absolute shame that Bernie Sanders will more than likely never see the Oval Office, or never sit in the Oval Office as president of the United States of America. And I say that it is an absolute shame because, despite what you might say about him or about his policies, one thing that he has never failed to do, and one thing that he did not fail to do last week, was stand up for Americans at all costs. He refused to vote on overriding the defense spending bill. If Mitch McConnell did not bring the $2,000 COVID relief bill to the floor, he will put it all on the line to make sure that that Americans are treated properly by the government, as he calls, you know, the richest government in the world. And I think that if Republicans are not careful, and I disagree with your take that there are sensible that a lot of Republicans are sensible. I think that a lot of Republicans, when it comes to policies, and again, hot takes, right? I've made a big switch, but are just misinformed. And when they're presented with actual evidence, logical, those sensible Republicans that you're talking about will make a switch to a more left-leaning take. And I've seen it happen. Hell, we've seen it happen on the podcast with some of the individuals that we've brought on. These sensible individuals are just misinformed. Either they're misinformed or they're Ben Shapiro, and they're making a lot of money off of misinforming other people. So it's one or the other. But I cannot deny either that I would want to at least see the dignity of being a Republican return. I think that the switch is fortunately going to be the new Republican Party is going to encompass Joe Biden's point of views, and the new Democratic Party is going to side more with Bernie Sanders and AOC. But we will see, and hopefully in 5, 10, 20 years, when we're still doing this podcast, I can tell you, I told you so, man.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, classical liberalism and progressivism is in the future. I don't think there will be a long-standing Republican Party for a long time. I think that a lot of times you have to consider the progressive wing is growing, and the Gen Z is increasingly progressive and democratic. And so I don't know what's going to happen. We can never tell what's going to happen, but I think that there's going to be a classical liberalist wing and a progressive wing making a broad, far-fetched projection. I'm not going to bet money on it because I don't have the money to give. But I would love to, once I get that money, to make a bet with somebody. Bunch of conservatives in the podcast, we can make a big betting pool and bet on it. You know, but that's beyond the point. I would love to, you know, first of all, this conversation was amazing. It has been quite a while since we've had a conversation like this. Just you know, stuck to the policy issues and had a great discussion about what we think, our personal opinions. And I think that, you know, our personal opinions aside, go have your own conversations about the election. It's coming up in 2 days in Georgia's Senate runoffs. The inauguration is coming up in 17 days as of now, January 20th. Go out and watch the election. Me and Damien tried to get tickets to the election, which we could not because Joe Biden is keeping and Kamala Harris, the administration is keeping a strong lockdown, and they're making sure people come in with masks and, you know, don't come in at all if they're not representatives or senators and or close friends and family. And so we couldn't go, but we're going to be watching it online with all of you guys. Hopefully we'll be streaming a little bit of it on here. We'll talk about that. But once again, have a conversation about the inauguration, about the Senate runoffs, about what you believe in, and create those political viewpoints and make them matter.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, go have these conversations. If you know, I won't end with too hot of a take. Vote if you think that voting is the right thing to do. Vote if you can vote, even more so. Even if you think, and you know, this might be my most centrist take here in a minute, but even if you think the elections are rigged, please go vote and voice your opinion for the individuals that you think would unrig the elections. I know I might be shooting myself in the foot by saying that, but your voice, regardless of at points what it might be saying, is powerful and is important. And it's important that you elect officials that at least agree with you. So go vote if you can. And if you are interested in what we're going to be doing in these upcoming weeks, we're going to be working our tails off in 2021. Happy New Year to all of you. Happy New Year, Varun. And if you want to keep up with what we're going to be doing, be sure to check out our social media. That's at Politatine Show on both Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, politatine.com. You know, Varun mentioned the live streaming. I'm live streaming a little bit. If you like my takes, if you don't like my takes, come check out the live streams. Just a little shameless plug. That's twitch.tv/Damien_Galvin. Check out the Patreon. Support us. If you, again, like what both of us are doing. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I like what y'all are doing by tuning into another episode of the Politatine podcast. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so very much for listening to today's episode of Politatine. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Politatine Podcast. That is www.patreon.com/Politatine Podcast to subscribe for exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. Visit www.Politatine Podcast for more amazing content from our sponsors. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.